In this episode of My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State.
And so they resorted to putting the grill downstairs. And their reasoning was because the downstairs basement had a direct stairway up to the door that leads outside. So they...
kind of like a chimney.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Adriana Sanchez learns why basement grilling has not really caught on as a winter pastime in Michigan. Irene overstays her welcome, forcing Ed Zumowski and his wife to bottle up some amazing news until she finally leaves.
I'm praying silently, God, please tell Irene to go home. Finally, she leaves, and we're alone with my parents. It felt great to share our exciting and our shocking news.
And Kathy Seaver and her husband seek shelter in the only place they can find it, under their baby's playpen.
So we run over and we run to the playpen and we pull it up and we flip it over. All the toys drop to the ground and we pull it down and we squat under it.
Family Dynamics. Up next on My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, I'm Rob Prince. Family dynamics are really interesting to me because you got this little tribe of people who are all trying to figure out what to do and how to do it, but it's not really a democracy, and sometimes it can lead to some questionable decisions, as Adriana Sanchez found out. She shared this story with me at my home in Alto in April of 2024. Here's Adriana. Tell me the story about the time that your parents decided to grill in the basement.
Ooh.
And before we begin this, when did this happen?
Okay, so this happened back in 2007.
Okay.
Yeah, in Wyoming, Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was the winter, right?
Yep.
Obviously, otherwise they would be grilling in the backyard, I would hope. And why, first of all, like, why was it so important that they grill that day, that they were willing to do it in the basement rather than just wait for summer or
so
do it outside?
They had received meat, deer meat.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's surprise meat.
Our uncle used to hunt a lot.
Okay, all right.
He would hunt and then he wouldn't know what to do with a deer.
So, seems like
yeah,
figure out beforehand. But
exactly,
okay.
Right. So that's what I say. That's what started the barbecue idea.
Okay, so suddenly you have this unexpected meat.
Yep.
And like cooking it in a pan is not efficient for the amount of meat that you had.
Exactly.
But also grilling is pretty important in Mexican culture too,
yeah.
Right? What's the big deal about it?
My parents like love grilling outside because it's a way to say like, hey, come over and kind of be reunited with like family members and have an excuse to come on over, especially if it's on somebody's birthday.
Yeah.
And just be like, hey, come over, I'm grilling some meat, and kind of like talk with people and just...
okay.
Just get together and have a good time.
So sort of the impetus for grilling in the basement was this surprise meat?
Yes.
And you wanted to socialize too?
It was more like the surprise meat.
Okay.
And then we needed people to eat the meat.
Right.
So we already, in the house, it was originally my mom, my dad, my uncle, who is my mom's brother, and my cousin, who is my mom's side as well. So
okay.
It was a pretty big house already. We had a lot of people in there, and me and my little sister, which it was... she wasn't even one. She was just born.
Okay.
Yeah. So she was a baby, like months old. And it was like winter of, I don't know if you remember those winters where you had snow and it was like up to like halfway through the door.
Mm.
Do you remember those winters?
You mean halfway through the door in terms of height?
Yeah,
like
the
it was
height.
Blowing through the door.
No,
oh.
Like the snow level was like halfway up
okay.
a door.
Okay.
Yeah, it was those winters where it was like super, super tough.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a lot of snow. It was super cold. And I remember those, for me, in my head, they lasted a while.
So what was the plan for cooking the venison? How are you going to do it?
So my uncle brought the venison. My mom started preparing like the dishes on the side. My dad was in charge of the meat. They were going to do it in the garage. There was a problem with something in the garage. I don't remember the exact problem, but there was a reason we couldn't do it in the garage at all. And there was no way we could do it outside because it was super cold. The fire wasn't going to stay up and everything. And so they resorted to putting the grill downstairs. And their reasoning was because the downstairs basement had a direct stairway up to the door that leads outside. So they
kind of like a chimney.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. And this is charcoal grilling, too,
this
right?
is charcoal grilling, yeah. Yes. Their idea was to leave the door open. But I remember I was cold and I sometimes would close the door. I remember like telling my mom, like, why do you guys have the door open? It's so cold in here. Like, going and shutting it. Mind you, I was like 7 years old.
Right. All right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They also invited some compadres over. Mm-hmm. So they came over. They're my dad's friends and stuff. So all us kids were like, it's so cold in the house. Because that door led to the kitchen as well. And the kitchen was super, it was like super open concept with the living room and the dining room. So we were in the living room and all of that cold would go up to us. And we were freezing in there. But they started grilling downstairs. It was pretty late at night when they started grilling. It was like 8. Okay, they did put right. a fan up. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, they thought about it as well. Mm-hmm. But there was things like people were coming up and down the stairs. People were opening, closing the door. People kept unplugging the fan because they were cold. Yeah, all things that were like, oh, Lord.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was a lot of things that they were doing to get the smoke out. Also, they tried to like cook all the meat at once. So they didn't have it open for like the longest time. But I mean, it did cook a little slow. Mm-hmm. So I went to my mom and I told her like that my head had hurt. And I told her, I was like, hey, mom, like my head's hurting. I don't feel super good. And she's like, oh, like maybe you're just tired. And she told me, she's like, just go to sleep. They were going to finish cleaning up and everything. But I slept with them. Mm-hmm. I used to sleep with them because of the rooms and everything. And it was just a little crowded. Mm-hmm. So I told them that and I went to bed that night. And I did tell her that like my head had hurt and that I was feeling dizzy, which, red flag, should have been signs.
Right.
Yeah, but it should have been some signs. Yeah, but and my little sister, she was like a few months, she was in bed already. And so my parents cleaned up. I didn't hear them come in at all, but I do know that they did stay a little later because they still had family over and everything, but everything was done. Comes around, my parents are already in bed, and I wake up at 3 in the morning, puking my guts out.
Oh.
Puking and puking.
Oh, my God.
And then I stopped.
Uh-huh.
But my parents were already with me.
Yeah.
And at first, they were like, I puked on the bed. I remember that. Uh-huh. And then I remember them grabbing towels. So I would puke on the towels. That way they would have to like clean the bed. And they thought maybe it was like the food at first. But my mom had also said that she was feeling a little bit bad too. And I guess I just kept puking for hours.
How is that even possible?
It was at least like an hour. Because I know I would stop and then I would start again.
And then
I would stop. And then when I would stop, my parents were like, okay, I think it's like over with and everything. They tried to give me an Alka-Seltzer because we always do that for when people are puking just to like settle their stomachs. But like not even that would stay. And that's when my dad was like, something's wrong. We need to go to the hospital. And so then my mom, my dad, and me left to the hospital. That's when like I know the sun was coming up. So it was really like early in the morning, I guess you could say. And my baby sister stayed with my cousin and he like would take care of her and everything. And we got to the hospital and my dad just kept explaining the situation, what had happened, that they had grilled meat and that maybe it was a meat. And then they heard grilled.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. So then I think that's where they came into like, we need to check your oxygen levels. They checked my oxygen levels. They were super low. My puking was because of the carbon monoxide that was in our house.
Wow.
Which is the silent killer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, were you hanging out in the basement at all?
Not really, no.
So it was working its way up the house.
Yeah.
Even with the door, which made me think the door open maybe was blowing it more through the house.
Exactly.
So the living room where you were hanging out.
Yeah. Then my parents' room is right above the basement of where they were cooking it. And I know we had like ventilation and everything. And I know for sure, I mean, smoke goes up. But that might have caused it as well in the same room. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at the hospital, they were great. They immediately got us into these like big tubes, like these big cylinder tubes where like your whole body's in there and you don't even have space to like roll around. You're just like straight up. And they like start putting oxygen into your blood system.
I didn't know these things even existed.
Yeah, I don't know what they were called. I didn't ask.
Right. You were in these like oxygen tube chambers.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like, there's still people in the house, right?
Yes. So then that's where my dad comes in, and they ask him, they're like, is there anybody in the house? And he's like, yes, my, like, 8-month-old baby is at the house, and we have a few other people there, like, former people there. And they're like, you have to get them out immediately. Do you want us to send an ambulance, especially for the baby? And my dad's like, oh, it might be quicker for, like, for me to call them and have him just bring it, bring the baby right away. So they did. They got everybody out. Everybody went to the hospital, reported to the hospital. They got their oxygen levels checked. They only put the baby in the oxygen.
Wow. How weird for your little sister, though, to be in a little, like, a few months old and has to hang out in that tube by herself. Yeah.
And I didn't understand the severity of carbon monoxide. I mean, I was a translator.
Wait, so all this is happening and you have to translate for your parents because they don't really speak English?
Yeah, exactly. And there wasn't many interpreters at that time. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And I tried to explain to them, and I'm like, carbon monoxide?
Yeah, I don't know that one in Spanish.
Yeah, I was like, that's not in my sight words at class. But I'm guessing my cousins and everybody who lived on the bottom floor, because all the other people that I mentioned to you lived on the bottom floor in the basement where it was cooked, didn't suffer because they had their doors closed of their rooms.
Oh, okay.
So because of me, because of my puking, I got my parents out the house.
You saved the lives of multiple people.
I wear the cape proudly.
All right. Well, this is a good time for a public service announcement about if you're going to grill, don't do it in your basement.
Exactly. Or in an indoor, in an enclosed space.
Yeah, probably, especially charcoal. I got to think that's pretty bad. But I think any type of grilling, probably best to do in the garage next time.
Yeah. I mean, even if the garage is cluttered, clean it.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool because I missed school. And I was in the hospital. That was fun. And then I came back the next day and everybody's like, where were you? And I was like, they put me in a tube.
I was like bragging rights at school. Yeah. You were in the tube.
I got to watch TV while you guys were in school.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, because they put a little TV screen on top of the tube. I didn't get bored.
Adriana Sanchez. She shared that story with me at my home in Alto in April of 2024. This is My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, the Family Dynamics episode. I'm Rob Prince. Would you like to see My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, live and in person, and maybe even share your own true story from Michigan with us? Well, lucky you, we've got all sorts of events planned around Michigan in the coming months. We'll be in Grand Rapids, Hastings, and Okemos in the next few months with other venues in the works. To stay fully in the loop, you can subscribe to our e-newsletter at mymichiganstory.com. That's mimichiganstory.com. And you'll get about one email a month filling you in on all the latest scheduled events and other My Michigan Story news. Again, the website is mymichiganstory.com with an MI at the start. Most families get approximately 9 months to adjust to the idea that their family is going to be growing soon and make plans for it. The exception to that case is when families adopt, in which case the news that their family is going to grow can come as an amazing but very sudden shock. In fact, it can be such a shock that other events in your life that would normally be devastating can seem like no big deal, as Ed Zumowski discovered back in the 1980s. He shared this story at our December 9th open mic storytelling event at the Hastings Public Library. And before I play it, I want to forewarn you that he read this story, but I rather rudely interrupted him at various points with questions about it. So brace yourself, because I burst in on his story unannounced at times. All right, here's Ed.
It was September 30th, 1983. The story revolves around the arrival of our daughter, Laura, into our lives. The story really begins about 3 days earlier. The agency which handled the adoption of our son, Andrew, the previous year, called. "We need to see you, and soon," she said. "And unfortunately, I can't tell you why." The appointment was made for the coming Friday, and our anxious wait began. You might say, why were you so anxious about this appointment? Well, back in those days, an adoption wasn't fully complete until 1 year after the placement. That's when the judge signs the final papers and new birth certificates become available and so forth. Well, our son came to us about 10 months prior to this, so the adoption wasn't really official yet. We wondered, has the birth mother found a reason to retract her decision? Is there some other legal issue going on here? Is our family going to get torn apart? So we tried our best to remain calm as the day of the appointment came upon us. So the time arrives for our appointment at Wayne County Catholic Social Services in Detroit. We dropped our son Andrew off at my parents' house, and we make arrangements to have dinner with them later at their house. So we drive to the agency in silence, and we arrive there about 20 minutes later. The social worker appears in the waiting room, ushers us into the office, and says, "I'm sure you're anxious to learn why we called you in here today." "Well, I have some surprising and exciting news to share. Andrew has a baby sister who was born on September 27th, the day we called you. And the birth mother wants you to adopt her." Wow. What a torrent of emotions fell on us. Joy, shock, relief, fear, love. We didn't know what to say or feel or think at that moment. We already had a baby in our lives. Now here's another one. Neither of us hesitated in our decision to say yes, but we started to wonder, aren't you supposed to get 9 months advance notice for a baby? "There's more," said the social worker. "There's a 21-day period in which the mother has the option to change her mind. I know this is going to be hard for you, but you can't tell anybody about this news. It's okay to tell your parents, but absolutely nobody else. It would be too painful for you to have to explain it later if something doesn't go right."
And how come they couldn't tell you just, even that it was good news? Why did they have to be so vague about what the goal was?
We never did get to ask that question. I don't really? Know. I don't know. Shocked and thrilled and bursting to tell somebody about our exciting news, we head off to my parents for dinner. Well, unexpectedly, my mom had invited a family friend to join us for the meal. Now, typically, Irene was one of those people that right after dinner, she goes to leave. She doesn't like to drive, and she especially doesn't like to drive at night. But for some strange reason, tonight was different. She lingered after dinner. It seemed like she was never going to leave. My mom starts giving us these funny looks like, "When are you going home? Aren't you going to take this baby to bed?" I'm praying silently, "God, please tell Irene to go home." Finally, she leaves, and we're alone with my parents. It felt great to share our exciting and our shocking news. After lots of hugs and tears of joy and amazement, we finally bundle up our son Andrew into the car, and we head for home. By this time, it's about 9:30. After a 20-minute drive, we pull onto our street, and as we approach our driveway, we see that about 10 of our neighbors are gathered around our house. "This is strange," we say to each other. "What the heck is going on?" Upon getting out of the car, my neighbor Paul says, "Your house has just been burglarized." "We heard the glass break, we called the police, and we scared the intruders off. But you probably shouldn't go into the house until after the police get here." At this point, we're pretty much numb. Yeah, our house had been burglarized, but it seemed pretty trivial compared to our other news of the day. What's the big deal here, we thought. After the police came and cleared the scene and filed their reports, We thanked our neighbors for their good work on our behalf, and we proceeded to put our son Andrew to bed, and we tried to get some rest. The shock of having our house ransacked really didn't hit us until much later in the night.
What did the burglars take?
Well, that's an interesting story. Because they broke through a window into the basement. And some we figured the burglar had to be extremely thin because we had these little casement windows that are only about 8 inches deep. And all that they took, we had had a coffee jar, a coffee can rather, on our son's dresser that we put pennies in. The thing was filled with pennies, probably weighed like 20 pounds. And probably was worth about $20. And they took that, and they took we had a crystal wine decanter, which we never used anyway, but somebody gave us as a wedding gift.
They were welcome to it.
They had ransacked our bedroom and torn everything up, but nothing was missing other than that we know of anyway.
And were they ever caught?
No. Well, no. Nobody looks for burglars, so.
Okay. Wait, nobody looks in the 80s for burglars?
Well, yes. You know, this was in Detroit, so it was probably not high on their list of priorities as far as crime.
It's pretty amazing you could come home to a burglary.
Yeah.
Not even resolved and be like, whatever.
Well, I think our neighbors probably thought, gee, they don't seem to be very upset by this, but it was, the burglary affected us a lot more later because then we found the burglar had left a jacket there.
Weird.
You know, and I don't know if it was warm in the house, he decided it was, but and it's kind of creepy to find someone's jacket in your house and know that they were looking through all your things. And if you've ever been burglarized, you feel violated. You
exactly.
Feel like you've been invaded somehow, mm-hmm. And it's a tough thing. But at the moment, nothing.
Wow, that's amazing.
We met our daughter Laura for the first time on November 4th, and on November 18th, we finally got to bring her home. But there was one more glitch to her story. 2 days before she came to us, she developed severe vomiting, and it turned out that she needed emergency surgery for pyloric stenosis. For the first 2 days after this surgery, she couldn't be fed anything except for a few drops of water. It literally took over a month for her to make eye contact with us and to forgive us for this undeserved torment. But she was home with us for Thanksgiving, almost a year to the day when our son Andrew became part of our family. So Thanksgiving has always had a special place in our hearts as our family day.
And how are the kids doing now?
They're both fine. Well, they're interesting. We've learned, at least I have appreciated genetics more by being an adoptive parent, because your kids, even when you're birth kids, they don't turn out like you, but they're different from us. I mean, both of my kids are very artistic. I'm not artistic at all. Our son is a musician, and our daughter's an artist.
Wow.
And so we always joke that we don't expect either of them to support us in our old age, but they're doing fine.
Good. Okay. Thank you very much, Ed.
You're welcome.
Ed Zumowski. He shared that story at our December 9th open mic storytelling event at the Hastings Public Library. Thanks so much to Barbara Haywood from the library for organizing that event there for us. We will be hosting open mics there at the library in Hastings every month for the foreseeable future, although the dates will vary. Our next scheduled event will be March 26th at 6 p.m. If you'd like to know more about that and our many other open mic events around Michigan, there's more information at mymichiganstory.com. That's mimichiganstory.com. It's tough when you have your first child because you pretty much have no choice but to wing it sometimes. No book or seminar is going to prepare you for every possible parenting situation. As our next storyteller, Kathy Seaver, found out, she shared this story at our November 21st, 2025 open mic storytelling event at The Lit in downtown Grand Rapids. Here's Kathy.
This was in 1992, and I lived in Grand Rapids with my husband, and we had been married just over a year, and we had a child. So we had a baby, Jordan, and we lived in a duplex, and we lived on the first floor, and the second floor was the other unit. When you walk into the first room, it's kind of the living room. And then the next room is a really large dining room. And off of that dining room are two bedrooms. And then the back room is our kitchen. In the kitchen, we had a playpen set up. It was nighttime. And I needed to use the bathroom. And the bathroom was right off the kitchen. So I go in. And during this time, we were renovating our bathroom. And we had a drop ceiling. And one of the tiles on the drop ceiling was moved over. So it was just kind of open. So I'm sitting there. And I see, you know, kind of out of my peripheral vision, something moving. And I look up, and it's a bat.
Oh!
So this bat comes out of the ceiling, flies out into the kitchen. I jump up, and I scream, and I run into the kitchen. And my husband hears me scream, so he comes from the living room, the front room, and we run into each other. And my pants are still at my ankles. So we were young. And this is the first time we had encountered a bat indoors. So we run over and we run to the playpen. And we pull it up and we flip it over. All the toys drop to the ground. And we pull it down and we squat under it. My pants still at my ankles. So we're sitting there. We're watching this bat fly around and our cat. He's running around, just swatting at it. And my husband says, "We can't just stay here." So, I'm like, "Well, I'm staying here." So my husband gets out from under the playpen and gets a tennis racket and a paper bag. And he gets the bat into the paper bag, takes it outside, and releases it. He did use the tennis racket to get it there, though. So anyway, the moral of the story is we both survived. That child is now 33. He survived, too.
Doesn't have rabies or anything like that?
No.
Oh, good.
No, he was asleep. The bedroom door was closed.
Okay.
So that was a good thing.
All right. So that explains why you could be afforded such cowardice.
Yes. And now I keep my pants up most of the time.
Good for you. Wow. Thank you very much, Kathy. That's wonderful.
Kathy Seaver, she shared that story at our November 21, 2025 open mic storytelling event at The Lit in downtown Grand Rapids. Super special thank you to Penny Hawk and all of the great people down at The Lit for hosting us. We will be at The Lit the third Friday of every month at 7 o'clock p.m. If you haven't seen that venue before, you definitely need to come down and check it out. It's an amazing historical venue in downtown Grand Rapids. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State. Today's episode was edited by myself, Rob Prince. My Michigan Story is presented by WKAR in East Lansing, Michigan. Remember, I can't tell my Michigan story without your Michigan story. So submit your story today at mymichiganstory.com.